Hello and welcome to the Currency Exchange, NatWest Markets FX podcast, where we break down the main themes and events driving markets in this week's and the weeks ahead. This week, we are joined by Brian Dangerfield, who is our co-head of G10FX, and we have a special US-centric edition for us. We've had a lot of US data over the last few weeks. The hotly anticipated data print this week was definitely the US core PCE. It seemed to come in exactly in line with expectations, but quite a big market impact. Brian, what am I missing here? What exactly was the market reacting to, and why was there such a big reaction?
Yeah, as you alluded to, Emer, this was a much bigger, it was a pretty solid reaction in the dollar lower rates, lower direction to a PCE deflator print, a Fed's key inflation measure that was actually pretty sizable. It was actually a pretty large increase, a 0.4% on the unrounded month on month, a little bit stronger in the unrounded version. So this was a pretty healthy number in terms of upside in inflation. This was a strong number, don't get me wrong, especially in the face of continued signs of disinflation that we had seen through the end of last year. This was a pretty solid number. But the market reacted in sort of the other direction. The dollar's actually sold off as we record this this podcast on Thursday morning. So what's the narrative here? What's the story? I think it's because this number is almost a bit dated at this point, because the PCE deflator number that we got today, this was the biggest piece of data this week, I should add. The PCE deflator number was for January. And some of the data that was included in today's number was already sort of published as part of the CPI and the PPI data, the consumer and producer price index data that we got a few weeks ago. Those two data points that we got a few weeks back were already quite a bit above expectations. And I think as we look in hindsight, that set a pretty high bar for the PCE deflator print that we got this week. I think the broader market narrative coming into this number was, we know from CPI and from PPI that inflation in January was quite strong, especially relative to the signs of disinflation that we have seen. And so I think today's number, the PCE deflator number we got, was bad news for the Fed, but it wasn't new bad news for the market, because I think the broader narrative around inflation at the moment is, we've had this disinflationary trend here in the US, not just in the US, but globally. Most of the inflation numbers we've seen have been showing signs of progress in terms of bringing inflation down. January was a step in the wrong direction. The PPI and CPI already told us that. The market had already reacted to that. And the PCE deflator doesn't add necessarily new information to that broad narrative. And I think that's one of the reasons why the market kind of took this number in stride. I don't think this necessarily means a big game changer for the Fed. Instead, I think we're going to look ahead to the next month's data as a sign to see whether the numbers we got in January were a fluke. Is it something that's related to other factors, or is it a sign of a reacceleration? I think that's the big question. It's why we're all looking ahead to some of the big data next week.
Yeah, on that note, next week does not disappoint in terms of US data releases. We have US ISM manufacturing, US ISM services, and obviously the big non-farm payrolls report in the US. How do you think the US dollar is approaching this? What kind of narrative is underpinning it?
Look, I think next week has the potential to be trend defining for the dollar, because you think about the data and the Fed, that's been the big driver of the dollar for a lot of this year. And we've leaned bullish on the dollar really since the turn of the year, with this idea being that the market had been pricing too aggressively for the Fed into the end of last year. And a lot of that has been priced out. And the data have really leaned into that. The January data across a number of different factors, including non-farm payrolls and the CPI and PPI, and most recently the PCE deflator, as I just mentioned, have surprised to the top side. Now, I think there's questions over whether or not this reflects a reacceleration in economic data, or whether some other exogenous factors may have led these numbers to be perhaps artificially strong. Maybe not artificially strong might not be the right way to say it, but stronger than they might otherwise have been. Things like weather, for example. We know in the non-farm payroll report that was released a month ago, the average hourly earnings gain was much stronger than the expectation, but part of that was likely due to weather, because the total hours worked came down in the survey, and that's partially related to weather. You can't come to work because of weather. That means hours worked can come down, and average hourly earnings, which is a factor of hours worked, can naturally move higher as a result. When you look in the inflation numbers, I think there are some signs that changes potentially in the weights of certain subcomponents as well as seasonal factors may have been partially responsible for some of the upside surprise we've seen. That's probably most relevant in the shelter components. So there's certainly some interest in why the owner's equivalent rent within some of the CPI, the inflation numbers we've seen for January, those seem to have shown at least a one-month sign of reacceleration, even though things like owners, primary rent ownership, the rents components in other, certainly private sector data seems to show that rent growth is cooling on a nationwide level rather than reaccelerating. And so there are certainly some questions in the January data. We know a lot of it was very, very strong. Some questions whether there's some residual seasonality impacting these numbers that's maybe pushing them to be well above trend, whether weather, excuse the puns there, but if the weather impact from a, in some cases, mild January, in some cases, you had quite a bit of snowstorms that impacted some data in the middle of the month in January. If those factors have caused the January data that was reported through the month of February to come in quite a bit stronger than expected. So I think the market comes into this first week of March when we're going to get our first big slug of February data with this narrative of, was the January data a fluke or was it the start of a reacceleration in the U.S. economy? And I think this week of data is going to be a moment where the market sort of tests that those theories in real time. I think if the data come in a bit softer than expected, if they kind of lean into this idea that maybe the January data were a fluke, that could be something that takes some of the pressure off the dollar. Of course, conversely, if the data come in strong, the market's going to have to contend with the possibility that maybe we are showing signs of reaccelerating here. Maybe the January data was not an aberration. And so I think it has the potential to be quite important this coming week from the data perspective. You mentioned the ISM survey data and the non-farm payroll, of course, on Friday. And then as we look even further, the CPI on March 12th, probably the big data points. But the way that we're framing this coming couple of weeks of data in the U.S., is against this narrative that we've seen where a lot of the data in January were really good. The inflation numbers were very high. But I think there's important questions over whether or not this is the sign of reacceleration or not. The February data that's going to be released in early March, that's going to give us some of that sign. And that's going to have important implications for how we think about the Fed and how we think about the dollar. I think we're still leaning in a bullish dollar direction generally, even if you think that some of the data in January may be overstating the risk of reacceleration. The U.S. data is continuing to perform very well against the backdrop of global growth, which continues to sort of muddle along. And that relative value in terms of relative growth, I think, continues to push in favor of the dollar here. But these data, as I mentioned, over the next couple of weeks, I think are going to be pretty important to how the market assesses the broader trend of U.S. data.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see, I guess, that first kind of clean print, because U.S. kind of economic data through January really did seem to defy kind of economic gravity and logic, given the tightening we've seen from the Fed previously. And it's not just on the economic side where there's lots of drama in the U.S., but also politically. So it's been quite a week in D.C. It looks like hopefully a government shutdown will be avoided by end of day tomorrow, which is Friday. But also we have to look ahead to the November elections in the U.S. We've obviously recently had primaries in South Carolina. What are you making of the state of play as we head into those big elections?
Yeah, this is a pretty big couple of weeks as well on the U.S. political calendar. We'll start with the shutdown because that's most front of mind. There's the possibility of a partial shutdown if a temporary deal doesn't get passed by end of day today as you're listening to this. But by the time you listen to this, we're recording on Thursday. It looks like there's a decent chance that this will be resolved before our podcast is actually published. So what's going on here? This is as is often the case in these government shutdown debates, there is a deadline for government funding that needs to be passed or else certain functions of government shut down. So that could mean things like Department of Labor, national parks closed, DMVs closed, that sort of thing. Importantly, we're not talking about a debt default as a risk. The debt ceiling issue is often linked into these government spending discussions because the debt ceiling is a much more important deadline and Congress loves to work to deadlines. And so they use the debt ceiling as sort of a deadline from which to work through spending. But the debt ceiling issue last year was pushed off until after the 2024 election. So importantly, a debt default, a technical default, is not on the line in any of these spending discussions, which really lowers the potential market impact of a potential shutdown. So just from the get-go, I think the risks around growth and risks to foreign exchange markets from a potential shutdown are already quite a bit lower this time than they have been in previous previous iterations. This is also not the first time even this year that we've gone through this process, right? Congress loves to push these deadlines slowly and slowly out because they can't agree on pretty much anything. So they keep kicking the can down the road, and that's looking like it's going to be the case this time. There's a plan that looks like it's going to get through Congress that funds about half the government through next Friday, March 8th, and the remainder through March 23rd. So effectively, we're just pushing these deadlines out a little bit as they try and buy more time to come up with a larger spending plan. But I don't think many in Congress or many in markets are particularly optimistic that the Republicans and Democrats can come to a big agreement on broader spending because of things like the fractured leadership, the fractured Republican coalition in the House, and the fact that you have divided government in an election year when the former president, who is the current by far the front runner for the nominee, is sort of pushing his own conservative wing of his party to stand firm on their demands for whether it be for lower spending or for changes in immigration and whatnot. So feels like once again, we're at a point where we're pushing these deadlines off into not the long grass, but just by a couple of weeks. But in terms of market impact, in terms of how does this impact the dollar, we don't think even if you were to get a short shutdown, it probably wouldn't have a major impact because, again, you're not faced with this potential technical default, which has potentially much larger ramifications. Those issues are not on the table today, and they won't be on the table really for the remainder of 2024, which I think is good news from a political risk perspective. One thing that we do come to, that we do have to think about in terms of government shutdowns is the risk of delayed economic data. You know, we just spent all this time, Emer, talking about how economic data in the US is very linchpin important for the path of the dollar, for the path of the Fed. When you have a shutdown in government agencies that produce these key data, for example, the Labor Department when it comes to non-farm payrolls, if you have a government shutdown, those agencies don't have the funding to continue to produce those data. And so you have the prospect that those data are released with a delay. So if you get a deal, the one that's sort of floating around now that looks like it's probably going to work its way through Congress over the next 24 hours, that pushes the deadline for most of the major data releasing agencies probably to March 23rd. But if you were to get a shutdown that occurs after that date, or if this deal falls apart and it turns out those agencies are subject to the sooner March 8th deadline, then you have the potential risk of delayed data coming after those dates. So that's something that we always need to be mindful of, that even if the impact from a growth perspective is potentially quite small, usually shutdowns are very temporary. They only last, the longest one ever was a month, just 1 month total. So even if you think that the overall growth impact is probably low, one of the things that market participants have to be aware of is that if you do get a shutdown, there is the possibility that data are delayed. Now, if it turns out the deal that's in Congress right now ends up coming through, we won't have to worry about the risk of delayed data until probably unless you have a shutdown after March 23rd. But this is something that's going to be very, as always, things in DC are changing every moment. And we'll have to keep abreast of the most recent developments. But it's looking like we won't have to deal with government shutdown related risk, at least for another week or two.
And obviously, there is the big thing of the November elections. How are you kind of seeing those as we approach? Obviously, it's probably far too early to call an actual winner. But, is it a given that it is a Biden versus Trump election?
It looks at this stage, it looks like barring a big surprise, either from the legal side or the health side, current president versus former president looks like it's going to be the contest into 2024. And honestly, that's not good news for most Americans. I think most Americans pretty consistently tell us that they would rather have neither Biden or Trump be the president, but those two looking increasingly likely to be the nominees. Look, and the big event coming up over the next week on the U.S. election front is Super Tuesday, which is the biggest day in terms of nomination contests. So these primary elections, we've had a drip feed of primary elections. We had Michigan this week. We had South Carolina over the weekend, as you mentioned, Emer. On Super Tuesday, which is next Tuesday, March 5th, we have the elections for a significant number of states, I believe around 15 states or so, hold their primary elections, including some of the largest, like California and Texas. So these, the way that you win the nomination is you win delegates in primary elections, and the delegates are set out proportionally based on population. And so when the big states vote, big delegate counts are on the line. Those delegates go to vote for you at the convention, and you're eventually nominated in the summer conventions. But Super Tuesday is the moment when the runaway winner, the person who gets the most delegates coming out of the out of Super Tuesday, is almost impossible to catch from a mathematic perspective. There just aren't enough big states left to vote, and there's not enough delegates on the line. And honestly, from a momentum perspective, the winner on Super Tuesday usually carries enough momentum that the remaining contenders drop out of the race. Biden is effectively running unopposed. The only opposition to Biden really is just the general unease among his party that he's perhaps too old or he's polling too poorly in order to actually beat Trump in a head-to-head matchup. But he's not actually running against anyone in the actual election in terms of the primary. So he's not at risk of losing any of the primary states on Super Tuesday. Trump, of course, is running against Nikki Haley, but he's been consistently beating her in both sort of moderate-leaning states as well as conservative-leaning states. I look for that trend to continue on Super Tuesday, where Trump is going to take a majority of the delegates coming out of Super Tuesday, and it should really lock him in as the nominee, although I think that's pretty clear at this point. So Super Tuesday, a pretty big moment. We're also going to get the State of the Union next week. Don't sleep on the State of the Union because, as I mentioned, President Biden is not polling particularly well at the moment. His popularity numbers have generally been low, and I think voters have legitimate concerns about his age, his health, and his level of energy heading into this election period. And so the State of the Union is effectively going to be a campaign speech for the president, give him an opportunity to sort of not only pitch his vision, but to pitch his ability and willingness to continue the fight for the Democratic Party, to lead the party, to lead the nation. So I think this is going to be a pretty big one to keep an eye on, the State of the Union, also next week. So there's plenty on the election calendar also to focus on. I don't think any of this is really enough to move the market right now. Certainly, as we get closer to the election, there's certainly a lot of potential electoral risk that comes with, do we get a change in administration? Do we get a change in U.S. political tact? Do we have a change in foreign policy that comes with, say, a Trump presidency? What does that mean for some specific countries and currencies? China and Mexico really come out. We actually talked about that a little bit last week, the risks to around Mexico heading into the election. So there's plenty to talk about as we head towards November. But as we think about the next week specifically, it's probably about Super Tuesday as the coronation moment for both Trump and Biden as their expected party nominees, and about the State of the Union as a moment for Biden to try and reset the race a little bit and give his, what I would consider his highest profile campaign speech of the in this early 2024 election campaign.
Brian, thank you so much for joining us today. That is about all we have time for. If you did like the podcast, please do click like and remember to subscribe so you get the latest episode first. Thanks again.